good morning, everyone. My name is Jonathan Perry, and I'm joined by my colleague here, Lisa Gentry, and we are representing the Louisiana Public Health Institute. So we are a local organization, and we're going to be talking to you all about behavioral health access in Louisiana, and specifically transforming community health systems for health equity. And so talking about two kind of different geographical locations, the Greater New Orleans area, which you all are in right now, as well as St. Tammany Parish, which is located across the lake. And so we'll get more into it a little bit later. And so unfortunately, Lisa and I do not have any financial relationships to disclose. But I did want to mention that we, in developing this presentation, we did have a third presenter who is not going to present with us, but Heather, who is in the audience, who is one of our biggest supporters. And so we do have three objectives for this presentation. Like I said, we're going to be comparing and contrasting the urban and suburban rural behavioral health systems, so pointing out some different unique nuances and characteristics for each system. And then talking about the process of systems transformation to improve access, quality, and sustainability of behavioral health services. And then finally, we'll talk about some strategies for collaboration as well as partnerships for going about this process of systems transformation. So to give you all some background, in the U.S. in 2010, 7.2 million people had an unmet behavioral health need. So behavioral health continues to be and has been an issue that is difficult to access for many individuals who are in crisis or need some sort of services. And so this issue is really complicated by the fact that if you're uninsured, you're five times more likely to not receive the care that you need. And so this is really key because behavioral health is very closely linked to physical health. So, you know, if you're diabetic, for example, if you're not getting your behavioral health issues met, then your diabetes is likely going to be under control, poorly controlled, or else you may not even be receiving the care that you need for those services. And so that's very problematic. In Louisiana, we are a southern state, and so we fall into many of the southern stereotypes. Many of our health outcomes are worse than the rest of the United States, and so behavioral health is a key example. 65% of people with any behavioral health needs went without it in Louisiana. And so that's a kind of a major issue. And it's complicated by the fact that in Louisiana, again, like many southern states, we are not a Medicaid expansion state. And so individuals are more likely to be underinsured or uninsured here, complicating the issue of getting quality behavioral health access that they may need. And so for behavioral services, the state operates by having human services districts. And so these are essentially the public health units that are required to provide behavioral health services for those individuals that are uninsured or underinsured. And so there are 10 of them. You'll see, so this is kind of the region that we're in right now. So there are 10 of them, and so they're required to provide services to individuals who don't have insurance. So individuals who might have serious mental illness, serious and persistent mental illness, they can go there and receive the services that they need free of care. And so oftentimes what you see with that kind of situation is that because of that, the wait times for these services can be extremely long. Because of the long wait times, individuals may end up going to the emergency department or finding themselves in crisis situations for situations that they could have prevented or addressed beforehand if they had access to the care that they needed. So this is a map of the Greater New Orleans area. And may be a little bit difficult for you to understand it, and so I'm going to help walk you all through it. This right here is Lake Pontchartrain. That lake is right across from us. We are closer to the Mississippi River right now. So we are about right here near the French Quarter. And so this area down here is the Greater New Orleans area. It's composed of four different parishes. We call them parishes. You all will call them counties, including Orleans Parish, Jefferson Parish, St. Bernard Parish, and Plaquemines Parish. The white areas represent urban density, and so you'll see this entire area is very urban dense. A lot of people live here. It's a very built infrastructure. There's a lot of systems and support services that are available here. Across the lake is St. Tammany Parish. That's the other side of the work that we were doing at the Louisiana Public Health Institute, and you'll see that it's very sparse. There are very few areas of urban build-up. It's much more rural and it's much more suburban area. You'll see lots of green spaces and areas where individuals are, it's more farmland and things like that. Whereas in Louisiana and New Orleans, at least, you'll see more areas of swampland here that are unlivable, but then areas where it's very densely populated. The other thing I did want to point out, if you haven't had a chance to see it yet, we do have one of the longest bridges across the waterway in the world, actually. So this is the causeway. It's 24 miles. If you get a chance, I definitely recommend taking a taxi ride across it. It's not the most exciting thing. However, you can have the opportunity to say you drove 24 miles across a lake. So this is New Orleans. You all are here right now. Some characteristics of New Orleans that are good to point out. It's an urban area. It's very densely populated. We are about 66% white, or I'm sorry, 66% black, and then 33% white. We have around 300,000 people and around 850,000 people who live in the four parish region. And we are densely populated in terms of services. So we have 10 federally qualified health center operators in the area that operate many more sites than that. We have numerous hospital systems and health systems that provide services for individuals in need. In addition, we also have a Medicaid waiver program. So although the rest of the state is not a Medicaid expansion site, we do have a waiver program here in the Greater New Orleans area that operates essentially like Medicaid expansion. And so if you are at the ages of 19 to 64 and otherwise would not be eligible for government assistance, you qualify for this waiver program and you can get insurance to cover your outpatient medical services. And so because of that, individuals can get slightly better access in New Orleans or the Greater New Orleans area than they would be able to get otherwise in the rest of the state. And so this map right here just kind of shows areas of poverty. The red areas are areas of high poverty, and the bluish areas are, so that's not water, that's an area of lower poverty density. And so one of the things you'll notice is that it's kind of very all spread out to some extent. You know, these are based on the census tracts, and so these show you where the populations of New Orleans really reside. And so it's all throughout. You know, one of the things that you may have noticed if you've driven around New Orleans is that you can go from block to block and see an area where a house might cost $1 million, and then literally go the next block down and see Section 8 housing. It's very block by block throughout the city. I also want to point out the range here. And so you'll see the range goes from below 15% to above 46%. So it's a very wide range. You know, those red areas are areas of high poverty, of very impoverished people. So that's important to note out. This is, I think, in many ways completely opposite to St. Tammany Parish, which is, again, just across the lake, very close, around 25, 26 miles away. Population size is much smaller. It's about 200,000 people. There are only two FQHC operators, so there's fewer health services for a much larger geographically expansive area. And so when you start talking about coordination, you know, coordinating services for individuals in need, you know, going from one service site to someplace else that might be 50, 60 miles away is difficult. And so individuals who have complex medical issues oftentimes run into problems getting those issues coordinated for themselves. Another thing to point out is that St. Tammany, for the rest of the state of Louisiana, has had one of the highest rates of suicide. And so that's one of the reasons why we're in this particular area doing those types of work. Again, going back to the lack of service providers in the area, because of that, individuals find themselves in crisis more often, and because of the lack of services to go and you know, have that crisis addressed, suicide runs very high, which is an issue. And so again, looking at the economic situations here, you'll see you know, still wide expanses of low poverty areas as well as areas with lower poverty. You'll see the range is very different, though. So in Louisiana, it went up to 45%. Here, it goes up to only 27%. So you still have lots of areas of high poverty, but they're not as impoverished as you may find in the greater New Orleans area. And so Lisa's going to come up and talk about the actual work that we're doing in these communities.
So like Jonathan said, I'm going to talk about two different projects that we've been working on at the Louisiana Public Health Institute here in Southeast Louisiana. The first one is the New Orleans Charitable Health Fund. This is a three-year project that we've been working on in the greater New Orleans area to integrate primary care, behavioral health, and social services. This project includes some direct funding to six of our community partners, and five of which are federally qualified health centers, and one is a social service organization doing some patient navigation. In addition to the direct funding, we do a learning collaborative model, and so we have quarterly in-person meetings. We provide some individual and group technical assistance, coaching calls, on-site visits, as well as via phone and webinars. The focus of the New Orleans Charitable Health Fund is really to improve the system of care by focusing on the clinic level kind of operations and workflows, which I'll talk about in just a minute. The idea is that by working with some of these individual providers and clinics, we can kind of transform the system by translating all of that work that's going on in the clinic system up to the system of care in general to improve access, quality, and sustainability of those services. The second project is the Transforming the St. Tammany Behavioral Health System project. And so in St. Tammany Parish, as a result of the high suicide rates that they had that Jonathan talked about, they've developed a behavioral health task force. And so that task force includes police, jails, schools, mental health providers, the primary care providers, behavioral health court, the emergency departments, St. Tammany Parish government. All of these people got together to really start looking at their system, trying to figure out why they have these high suicide rates, why the care is not coordinated very well, and how can they work to improve that system. So they brought in Louisiana Public Health Institute, and we also contract with our partners at the National Council on Behavioral Health, and really came in and did an intense assessment of what does the behavioral health system look like in St. Tammany Parish. We did over 50 interviews with providers, with consumers, really trying to understand, you know, if somebody's in crisis, what happens to them, where are they going, and then really map that out to see what are some ways that we can improve that process. So through that, we've kind of developed a plan with a lot of recommendations that we've given to the parish. It's used already to help them change some of the way that they're paying for some of these services, their contracts with some of the providers. And also we're building an online dashboard, so we're trying to bring together data from all of these different providers to really get a clear picture of what the whole system looks like. So this might be a little bit hard to read, but I just wanted to point out a couple of the different approaches that we've taken with these projects. In the greater New Orleans area, again, it's very clinically focused, working on, you know, workflow analyses where we go in, we really map out what happens to a patient as they enter the system, as in enter the clinic, what happens through that whole visit until they leave. So are they getting all of the services that they need? Are they being referred to the most appropriate organizations? And also, are they just being provided with some general prevention and wellness opportunities that they may not have provided before? We know that people, when they go to see their primary care doc, this might be the one time you've got them in there to be able to receive some services, so you want to be able to get them everything that they need right then and there. And then over in St. Tammany, like I said, it's a bit more of a broader approach. We really looked at the system and translating that down to, with our recommendations, what needs to change in the clinics and in the providers to really be a part of this whole systems transformation. So I'm just going to show you one quick example of this systems mapping that we did, and you're not meant to be able to actually read what this is, but just to provide you a visual of a tool that we use to really map out, this is the future state of what we want the behavioral health system to look like in St. Tammany Parish. So we did this first as to what it is now, and we saw where the gaps were, what were the problems, why were people going to the emergency department instead of receiving services in their outpatient facilities. And then developed this map and say, here's what we want it to look like. And this was developed with the input of all of the providers in the behavioral health task force, based on the consumer interviews that we did in the parish, and really wanted to make sure that we could map it out and provide some accountability to all of the partners as well. So everybody that's on the task force has a clearly defined role in this system. They can see where they fit in, they know what their responsibilities are, and because they're invested in this project, they know that if, you know, they don't stand up to their end of the bargain, the whole system could fall apart. And so it's not meant to be any sort of punitive process or anything, but it's really to make sure everybody has buy-in, they've all agreed to this, and they're working on taking the steps to really transform and make this system a reality. As with any kind of systems transformation projects, you do run into some challenges, and so even though the approaches that we took in both of these communities were relatively different, we did face some similar challenges in both of the projects. I'll just touch on a few of them because I know I'm running a little bit short on time, but integrating social services we found to be a challenge at both the clinic level and at the systems level. It's really hard to effectively integrate social services in a way that is meaningful and comprehensive, and also documenting those social services referrals and follow-up was a challenge. That kind of speaks to the data quality issue, and it's not even just data quality, but it's just the capacity for people to report data that they may not be used to reporting, and then being able to aggregate that up as to a more collective picture so that you can actually see the system as a whole. We still continue to see providers and organizations operating in silos, hence the lovely silo. Even though we've been talking about this whole move towards integration over the past, you know, many years, it's still hard to really bring them together and start thinking collectively. Culture change, obviously, it's a big issue. We know that people have been providing services, I mean, ourselves included, in a certain way. You've been trained to do it a certain way, so it's really taking those steps to change the culture within a clinic and then within the whole system. And then coordinating care along the continuum, just, you know, there's always barriers that you face. You've got transportation, you've got communication, information sharing issues between providers. So really understanding what are some ways that we can better coordinate that care along the continuum. And so luckily we were able to come up with some solutions similar in both regions. Engaging social services at the start is really, it sounds intuitive, but I can't really tell you how many meetings I've been sitting at where we're talking about behavioral health services and everybody brings up barriers such as transportation and, you know, housing and food and everything like that, and just talking about their difficult populations when those providers that work on those services aren't sitting there at the table. And so really bringing them in to sit on a behavioral health task force or to, you know, sit in some of these learning collaborative meetings to make sure that their voice is heard and that those issues actually are addressed. Assessing data feasibility and have partners lead the effort. So when we're trying to put together the dashboard, for example, for St. Tammany, we really wanted to understand what was the capacity for providers to even report data. So we may have all of these metrics that we want to show, here's what's happening in the system, but if they can't report them already, then we can't expect them to just at the drop of a hat start doing that. So really looking at what they're able to report and then having them actually define what they want to report on. So whatever questions that they want answered, you know, we could kind of help them say, okay, well, if you want to know this, here's the data that you're going to need to collect. Let's help figure out a way for you to be able to do that. So having them invested, having them define what measures and what data is going to be collected really, you know, provides them, they have the buy-in to do it. They'll give you higher quality data. Developing MOUs, this, you know, one of the things that we really recommend is, you know, it's still a kind of a struggle for everybody to do, but having formal relationships with all these providers, clearly defined roles and expectations, here are the resources available to you, here's how you access them, really provides that avenue for integrating some of these services. In terms of the culture change, having leadership buy-in is key. You want the leadership to really be modeling these services and these changes that we're trying to bring about. And what I've been hearing recently through several different talks and several different meetings I've been in recently is the rule of sevens. And this is basically just a generic way of thinking about it, but you really have to communicate things seven times in seven different ways for people to really grasp, understand, and become involved and engaged in whatever change is trying to be taking place. And then last is really providing this accountability of all the partners, making sure they all have ownership in their piece of the system, kind of like back to that map that I was talking about, making sure that everybody really knows clearly defined roles, how they play into the system, and then tracking them in a sense by, you know, having work groups that report back and meet and do things like that to keep the momentum going. So I just want to close on the comment that both of these systems transformations are really aimed at promoting health equity and reducing health disparities by improving access to behavioral health all along the continuum of care, whether it's prevention, crisis response, crisis recovery, and really want to make sure that people have access to these services and can live high-quality, healthy lives regardless of where they live, work, learn, or play. So thank you.